The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome back to the Scouted podcast with me, Joe Donoghue. I'm joined again by Scouted analyst and player ID extraordinaire, Lou Davies. We chatted last month at the beginning of the transfer window about some interesting transfers that we really like the look of. It's now approaching the end of the window, or the summer window at least, so we're back with another episode covering some more movers that are interesting for various reasons, including those we think that have the capacity to do well at their new clubs, as well as players we've tracked for some time and those we've watched at youth international tournaments and so forth. Without further ado, though, Lou, welcome back to the pod. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's going good. It's good that football's back because the transfer mania is a bit incessant. It's a bit relentless. It's a bit draining. Obviously, that I shouldn't be saying that on a transfers podcast. But yeah, good to have football back. And yeah, hope you're doing well as well.
Yeah, the Scouted Interesting Transfers Volume 2 episode where we both decry that transfers are the most grating part of the football season. Yeah, it's a real selling point for anyone who is maybe a new listener and is deciding whether to carry on for the foreseeable of this episode. But yeah, we've picked out a number of transfers, I think five in total, and then a few honourable mentions as well, sort of like clubs and general transfer trends that we can discuss. I do want to start with one of those trends to begin with before we delve into the individual players, because today you've tweeted on the Scouted account about, you know, everywhere you look this summer, clubs are pawning off academy graduates just to bring in or pay for players from elsewhere that aren't much better. It's always happened, but feels like it's happening more and more now in this financial landscape. What was the motivation for that? What's your general read of the situation? Because I mean, We definitely have seen an uptick in that sort of thing in this transfer window, certainly.
Well, the trigger point for that tweet was Olympique Lyonnais. So they've just sold Mamadou Sarr, a highly rated centre-back. I really liked him at the under-17 Euro a couple of years ago. He was part of that team that had Désiré Doué, Matisse Tell, one of Zaire Emery that won the whole tournament. I really liked him then. He's been out on loan since, so you'd think now that this would be the time that they integrate him into the team, make him a starter, and then maybe sell him on for in a couple of years for 50 million because he's that sort of profile. But instead of that, they've sold him to Strasbourg, and obviously Strasbourg are Chelsea owned. They're big players in this sort of youth market, so they've gone in early for him. It's just grating. Because you're pouring off your homegrown academy talent to pay for guys like Aurel Mangala from Nottingham Forest, who they signed for 30 million. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I think there's this massive perception in football that whatever's on the outside is always better and whatever's on the inside isn't quite up to the level. I think you should flip that the other way around. You should be a bit more sceptical of what you don't know and really trust the people that are already within the club. I think you see it at every single level. It's not just Premier League, Ligue 1, whatever it is. You can see it at Cymru Prem level. You can see it in top flight Welsh football, where clubs always prefer that guy that's been around the block a bit, that has a bit of experience behind him, when they have better talent within their own academy system and they don't trust it. So I could name a couple of examples of that in the Cymru Prem, which is local to me, but obviously it's very obscure for this podcast. But I think it's something that's prevalent across every single level of football, and it's really starting to grind my gears now, especially as a scouted man. Obviously we focus on youth football, but we want to see academy players do well at their academy clubs, at their boyhood clubs, and it's no more pertinent in the past week when Chelsea have sold Conor Gallagher or if anything, they've bought João Félix from Atleti just to sell Conor Gallagher. So, yeah.
I mean, talking of obscurity, this is the obscure podcast for young players and transfers and that sort of thing. So, I mean, feel free to riff on that as much as you like with the Cymru Premier League. But yeah, we'll get into the individual players, maybe a step above. But I mean, Lou, you listed your three picks to me this morning. Had a sort of a little look to them. I mean, there were ones that I was already aware of, or at least two of the three I was aware of. I mean, I don't know which one you want to start with, because they're all very, very interesting and also, well, sort of scouted favourites in a way. I don't want to pigeonhole you into picking one to begin with. So go for it. Who is the transfer that you'd like to discuss first off the bat?
Just because it leads off quite nicely from that little tangent we did at the start. I think we'll start with Bobby Clark going from Liverpool to Red Bull Salzburg. So Liverpool over the past couple of years or past decade under Jurgen Klopp have been really, really good at bringing through academy talent. Klopp is pretty much unprecedented at the elite level in terms of trusting what's already within the club. I think last season it was no more obvious than in that League Cup final when they brought on Jadon Dans, Bobby Clark, Trey Nioni was on the bench, etc., etc. So going into that shift from Klopp to Slot, I was really interested to see whether that could continue. But I think the early signs so far, especially under the new leadership group of Richard Hughes and Michael Edwards, that they're not trusting in their own as much. They're looking to sell them off earlier to fund bigger deals for more established players. So Bobby Clark is one of those that's gone. €12 million to Red Bull Salzburg. There's another Liverpool link with Red Bull Salzburg now because they appointed Pep Lijnders, Klopp's former assistant, as their new head coach. So that's a very obvious link for Clark. That probably has a big factor to play in it. But I think Clark is the type of talent that Salzburg go for anyway. I like this one because I think Clark's ready for senior football. So going in at Salzburg at a high-end Austrian mid-tier level is a good place for him to really sink his teeth into senior football and kick on pretty quickly. I expect him to be a starter from the off. Salzburg don't pay this sort of fee for someone that's going to stay at Liefering for a season. He'll come in straight away under Lijnders and start and do what he does on the pitch. I'm not sure if you've watched much of Clark, but when I've watched him before in the Youth League and other tournaments, I really like him for his sort of that assertiveness in midfield. The comparison I made with him in terms of players was Jordan Henderson. I know that doesn't sound flashy. It's not great. I think a few people say, well, if he's like Jordan Henderson, he's not up to much. But just in terms of that athleticism, that drive between the boxes, I think they're quite similar, especially once Clark fills out into his frame a bit more, maybe grows a couple more inches. But yeah, he's got that really punchy style as a midfielder, which will suit Salzburg, suit the level. And yeah, I think that's a really interesting one. Only happened in the last couple of days, so it's very fresh as well.
Yeah, I mean, his style is quite bolshy, isn't it? You know, he's someone who is, as you say, that assertiveness, I think is probably the best way to put it. You know, no airs or graces about coming into an elite team like Liverpool and maybe being a deer in headlights. He was someone who was always the protagonist in those youth league matches. I mean, I know that was essentially the write-up that he got from yourself and Steve in those UEFA Youth League roundup pieces that you did on the Scouted Notebook over the past couple of years. So, yeah, really looking forward to seeing how he adapts to regular senior football. I think it's from having seen even just snippets, he's someone who will do very, very well there. And again, as you say, Red Bull Salzburg don't spend that sort of money on someone unless they're absolutely convinced. And yeah, anyone who has watched him will be convinced. I don't have too much knowledge in the sort of the actual playing side of things, or certainly not enough to hold a candle to your experience of watching him. But I do have a little bit of knowledge relating to the Clarks, as one of my best friends who I grew up with. You know, people might realize or might know that from the accent that I am from the northeast of England. And of course, Bobby Clark was at Newcastle United before going to Liverpool. One of my best childhood friends, he actually used to work with Bobby's mother, so he's actually familiar with her and the family and everything. And obviously, his dad is Lee Clark former Newcastle, Sunderland and Fulham midfielder. And quite similar, I think Bobby's quite similar in style on the pitch to his dad there. But yeah, that's sort of the extent of what I can offer in terms of insight on Bobby Clark. But no, certainly a move which really sort of pricked the interest, certainly at the price point that he's gone for as well. And as you mentioned, you know, it's an interesting, well, the reason that it's an interesting transfer is because it's that shift in Liverpool's strategy or policy. I'm going to go on to my first pick from my list of players. And again, it's quite a recent transfer. You know, doing the research for this episode, going through the various moves that have happened in the past couple of weeks, there weren't loads that I thought that immediately jumped off the page. And I was thinking, I really want one which is a little bit surprising, or there's a little bit of backstory there. And what I was able to glean from this transfer is that scalability, that is the big thing for me. It's Tierno Barry, who's moved from FC Basel in Switzerland. He's gone to Villarreal in Spain's top flight, of course. He's moved for 14 million euros. So, you know, not a small fee, certainly not one that Swiss clubs receive all that often. But for me, when I was looking at him as it's sort of like an interesting move and an interesting profile, ticking a lot of boxes. So he's a FC Sochaux Academy graduate, or at least he certainly played there as a youngster. And Sochaux are renowned for their development of players in French football. And another big tick in interesting transfers box was that he's 6'5" tall. He's a centre forward, but he also can play out wide. And he's been just as prolific coming off those wide areas as he has been through the middle. He has begun this season for Basel like a house on fire. And Villarreal have gone, you know what, I'm going to have a bit of that. Scored 8 goals in his first 4 matches. I've not got that the wrong way around. He's got, I think it was a hat trick in the Swiss Cup, again against lower opposition. And then he also scored 5 in Basel's first 3 Swiss Super League games of this season. So he's really hit the ground running. And Villarreal, obviously, you know, had been tracking him for quite a while. Don't want to miss out on that. So they've gone and paid the money. 12 goals, 5 assists last season, 37 appearances. Again, good numbers, not ridiculously good numbers, but I think it's what he brings. You know, his physical profile, his stature is something which is quite in vogue, particularly in Spanish football right now. You look at these big body athletic forwards. You know, I'm saying forward because he has played and scored off either flank. You know, the likes of Samu Omorodion, you know, Nico Williams, I mean, was fantastic at the Euros. Not your traditional diminutive players that you'd associate with Spain's top flight. But going back to the point which I made about scalability, he previously scored 20 in 33 games for SK Beveren in Belgium, and 10 in 22 for Sochaux's B side, and that is what you're looking for. If you're a director of football, you are looking for that scalability, because for Sochaux's B side, he was playing at the Championnat National 3 level, which is Step 5 in France. So you're looking at as an English equivalent, the conference in old money or the National League. Then got his move to Beveren, who are in were in the Challenger Pro League, which is Step 2, the second division in Belgium, to then the Swiss Super League, which is a top flight, but again, it's not one of Europe's biggest top flights. And yet he's managed to score double figures in each of the last 3 seasons. I'm not saying he's going to do that immediately in Spain, but there's certainly an indication that he does adapt well. You know, to watch him, he's got that long leg, low sock combo, which is always a joy. Very, very unrefined. You know, he does have, similar to Omorodion in a way, that, you know, he's very effective, but, you know, there are, you know, areas to his game where, you know, for example, he sometimes can really pump passes into a teammate that really just need to be clipped or, you know, delicately done. But as I say, very effective in transition. A lot of his goals coming from there. And I'd say probably a better finisher when he has less time to think about what's next. You know, he's right-footed, quite instinctive. But yeah, really one that I don't know if you'd come across previously, given that he'd scored quite a few with Basel. But someone who's very, very interesting, and, you know, is now in the space of 3 years, gone from step five in French football to the top flight in Spain, and to a good top flight club as well.
Yeah, so I've not watched much of Barry, but he was on my radar just because of that scalability that you mentioned. So one of the things that I'm always looking out for when I'm constantly refreshing the transfer market latest transfers page is looking for players that are jumping up levels pretty regularly. So as you touched on there, he's gone from tier five France into tier two Belgium, up to Switzerland, then the top flight, top end of Switzerland, and now he's gone to a European contender in La Liga. So those sort of jumps on a fairly regular basis are big green flags. I think this is a really interesting pick because it hits on something that we've been talking about a bit at Scouted in, well, this summer particularly. It's about profiles and potentials. So I think more and more now clubs are just targeting profiles rather than what they are now. They're thinking, oh, what if this guy clicks at my club? What if I can change this guy? I think we're seeing it more and more. So clubs are trying to find value in that sort of market. They might not be doing it straight away. In Barry's case, they are. But they're taking that little bit of a punt on someone that offers something extraordinary. So as you mentioned with Barry, he's 6'5". He's mobile. He can play off either wing. He can play down the middle. He can do a bit of everything. So I think as soon as you have a profile like that, clubs are just going to get attracted to him straight away. There's been a couple of moves like this in the past couple of weeks. I think Will Osula from Sheffield United to Newcastle United is a similar one. He hasn't really done much at senior level. He's scored a couple of goals for Derby County on loan in the FA Cup. But when you watch him, he's tall, he's languid, he's direct, he's really fast. He can strike a ball. So clubs, Newcastle especially, are taking that gamble on him clicking at their club. And if it does click, then that 50 million that they paid for him will look like a snip. So Falem Ayulu to Bristol City, a very similar one again. We've talked about Mayulu on the podcast before. I think you talked about him with the other Bundesliga boys. He's one that went from, that bounced around some of the youth teams in France, went to Wolfsburg, didn't quite hit it out there. Then he dropped down to the second tier Austria, set the house on fire basically with his extraordinary profile, which is similar to Barry, which is tall, mobile, skillful as a dribbler, really good finisher off both feet. And now he's gone to Bristol City after a year at SK Rapid. So yeah, clubs are just taking that gamble more and more on profiles and potentials. And I think Barry to Villarreal is another example of that.
Yeah, Bristol City have made actually quite a few interesting signings, you know, both on loan and permanent this summer. That so much so that I think they could be quite a good pick for going, making sort of one of the later playoff places. So I do rate sort of the management setup that they have there. They do play good football. They've got a good base. And the likes of signing Falem Ayulu, I think they've just signed Marcus McGuane as well, who was previously at Arsenal and Barcelona B.
Sinclair Armstrong.
Yeah, took the words out of my mouth. Sinclair Armstrong from QPR, really showing intent there. They've got George Earthy on loan from West Ham. And I think the signing of Scott Twine. Scott Twine at any EFL club is a good pickup. And again, you know, talking about the management, Liam Manning, I think he's very much got his head screwed on when it comes to coaching and you know, from a tactical point of view as well. So, I'm just looking down the list here as well, they've got Yu Hirakawa that they've loaned in from Makeda Zelvia, who I believe went up as J2 league champions in Japan last season. So, they've definitely gone left field. But when you consider they've got 5 million from Middlesbrough for Tommy Conway and reinvested a decent portion of that on 4 pretty good permanent incomings, I do think that they've got an outside bet. But yeah, that's kind of just a little deviation from that little segment. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the gambling on profiles certainly seems to be a bit more of a trend now compared to, you know, gambling on an individual player. So yeah, interesting stuff. Lou, who's your second pick that you're going to go for?
My second pick will be Osama Sahrawi. He's moved to Los Galil from Heerenveen in the Eredivisie, and Sahrawi should be a very familiar name to proper scouted bods, because we've tweeted about him loads, we've written about him loads. Ever since I first watched him, I fell in love, basically. He's one of my favorite prospects that I've ever watched. And just the regularity within which that we've wrote about him, covered him, you should know about him by now if you're of a certain scouted vintage. So, but yeah, the move to Lille is a really interesting one, because he's come out of the Eredivisie after 18 months there at Heerenveen, and he was one of the most prolific dribblers anywhere at any level that you'll ever see. He was averaging something about 10 dribbles per 90. He was completing, I think it was roughly 3.65, which isn't a great efficiency, but 3.65 is one of the most prolific dribbles completed numbers that you'll see as well. So he's very much a dribbler, very much a street style footballer. You can tell that he's grown up playing cage football in Oslo, played on the streets. Just the way he moves with the ball, the way he controls the touches, the creativity, the little jinks and shifts, and just delicate changes of tempo and balance, and all those little bits just scream street footballer. And I'm really interested in this move just to see how he scales up from a middling Eredivisie team up to one of the better Ligue 1 teams. I've always had this nagging doubt in the back of my head about Sahrawi, that he's quite small, he's very slight. He has that sort of sharpness over 5-10 yards, but he isn't rapid over longer distances. So I was always interested how he scales up through the levels. So he's gone from Vålerenga in the Eliteserien, and he's managed the jump up to the Eredivisie pretty well. So this is another big jump for him now, and I'm interested to see how he handles it. The early signs suggest that he's settling pretty quickly. He's starting games already, which is always a good sign. He's doing what he does. I think he completed 4 out of 7 dribbles on the weekend in the Ligue 1 opener. So he's doing the right stuff so far. But yeah, just in general, I'm really interested to see how he scales up. And yeah, that's it.
I mean, he always had a good return in Norway. You know, I think he played close to 100 games for Vålerenga. And yes, while he was the standout purely for his dribbling ability and ball carrying, and just, I mean, 10 dribbles per 90s, or like obviously 10 attempted dribbles, it's ridiculous. It's like anytime you're getting on the ball, it's right, okay, head down, let's go. Which I feel like, had he come through a different setup, maybe that would have been sort of kicked out of him or coached out of him a little bit. But now he's at the, I mean, he's at an elite level French club now. And he's still doing it. So he's banked on his own ability. He's doubled down on what makes him stick out. Well, basically that's his USP, you know, world football wide. And it's got him to this point. If he's able to convert that into actual tangible output, then again, whatever it was, 7-8 million euros, it's going to look like a snip. And we've seen Lille do that before with players. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that, I mean, that the front three potentially of Osami Sarawi, Mohamed Bayo, and Remy Kabea, that's one for the for the purists. That's going to be an incredible watch, to say the least.
They've also got Edon Zagrova on the other side, who's another very dribbly boy. I think he's ex-Basel himself. So, two very prolific dribblers on either side.
And, you know, Jonathan David to come into that mix as well. Yeah. Ethan Mbappe to come on in a deeper role. Lille are going to be fun to watch this season, to say the least. Going with my second pick, so our fourth individual player, I've gone with one which is, again, I mean, scouted heritage, although this player is only 18. It's kind of a double move. Paris Brunner, the German youth international, he signed for AS Monaco for around 4 million euros this week, or rather last week. And I would like to get your thoughts on this, Lou, actually, because he has immediately gone to Cercle Brugge in Belgium on loan, obviously owned by the same ownership group as Monaco. And you'd think that was exactly the plan for Brunner when Monaco signed him. 4 million euros seems quite low, given that he has absolutely torn up youth football in Germany for the past couple of years.
Yeah, it does seem quite low. I'm not sure what his contract situation was like. That could have a factor in it. But I think he's another one that you're not quite sure how he's going to translate to senior football, because there was such a disparity between him and his peers at youth level, in terms of just pure physicality and athleticism. The comparison I've always made with Brunner at youth level is he plays a bit like a Rafael Leao. He's that sort of go-to wide attacker that can carry the ball up. He can get into the box. He can finish from sort of all angles and situations. But yeah, I've, again, similar to Sahraoui in some ways, I've always had that sort of nagging doubt. How does he translate that physicality to the higher levels when he won't have that physical advantage? It works at youth level because he is that much quicker, he is that much stronger, that much more mature than others. So I think the move, the loan, in fact, to Cercle Brugge is a pretty sensible one. It might be a bit too high still. I'm not really sure how he's done that, playing for Borussia Dortmund's B team in the lower reaches of the German system. But yeah, I think when it happened, I was a bit surprised. I was a bit taken aback in terms of BVB just letting him go. But I think if you listen to people that follow Dortmund regularly, especially at youth level, they're not as high on him as we were when watching him in the youth league and other tournaments. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Just to be like a case in point, basically, just to see how that sort of tier of player at youth level translates to the higher levels in senior football. So yeah, it'll be interesting one to follow, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, you say that, you know, Belgium could be just too high a level for him at this moment in time. You know what? Even if he doesn't, you know, pop off in Belgium, or even just have a really steady season, then it'll be good to see, as you mentioned, you know, just that development. You know, going back to scalability, what is his scalability to, you know, regular senior football, where he isn't the biggest and the strongest and the most athletic and the standout. You know, what sort of impact that has on sort of his confidence, and yes, essentially what he's made of. But yeah, just on a more general note, you know, it is his first proper step into senior football. You know, he scored hatfuls for Dortmund's 17s and 19s, as well as Germany's under 17s. I think his record is like 20 goals in 25 under 17 internationals. I do think if it does go well, then the Belgian Pro League is a good stepping stone for him, because, you know, he's going from youth football to a league which does develop young talent pretty well. It nurtures it. It allows it to flourish. It really allows it to thrive. And it is with the caveat of as long as he earns the minutes on the pitch. Because you look at Cercle's, their attacking options, he can play through the middle, but I think it's more likely that he's going to play off the left in this team when he does play, because, you know, they've still got Kevin Denke there, we've discussed on this podcast before. I believe it was with Lee Scott. He's obviously a very, very accomplished scout. Denke is someone who is a bit of a different profile. He's certainly more experienced than Brunner is, and yeah, I feel like would be up to the task of a physical, more of a battering ram than Brunner at this point in his career. And looking at the options on the left-hand side for Cercle, they've pretty much only got Kazim Olaigbe on that side. So I could see a sharing of minutes. But, you know, just again, on a general level, Golden Ball winner at the under-17 World Cup last year, Paris Brunner. That's essentially where you'd watched him previously in the youth league with Dortmund. The under-17 World Cup and the highlights from that is pretty much where I first came across him. So I was always going to be interested to see where he took his first step into senior football and whether it would be with Dortmund or somewhere else. And obviously it's proved to be somewhere else, but it's not like, I don't know, it feels like a dress rehearsal for him going on loan immediately to Belgium. You know, you've described him previously as big body, power and speed, promising technical skill, get him into isolated situations, and he can make something out of little against, and here's the caveat, youth-level defenders. He's difficult to contain. I'll be very, very interested to see how it goes. I'll be keeping an eye on it. But certainly, if he's able to replicate what he's done at youth level, then it's someone to be really excited about. And
yeah,
we'll start seeing, you know, the likes of Fabrizio Romano, tweeting about him, or interest in Paris Brunner, et cetera, et cetera. Who's your final pick on the old individual players?
My final pick is another scouted favourite. Again, if you've read anything that we've put out on Scouting Notebook over the past year or so, you should be familiar with this name. So it's Oscar Zambrano, going to, of all places, Hull City in the Championship from LDU Quito. Again, Zambrano is just one of my favourites. When I first watched him at the Under-20 World Cup last summer, I was just taken by him instantly. He's the type of player that I really like to watch. He's a deep-lying midfielder that's more of a passer first. It's not an exaggeration when I say that he's just one of the best line-breaking passes that I've ever watched anywhere. It's just not just the frequency and the quality of it. It's just the sort of style that he does it with. It's like quite mesmerizing to watch, especially when I went to watch him again at playing in Ecuador after that tournament, and he was playing on this pitch that was like an ice rink, basically, and the ball was just gliding across the pitch just with his compact technique and just lasering through the tightest of gaps onto players in the back foot in the little pockets. And he was doing it over 20, 30, 40, 50 yards. It wasn't just those little short-range line breakers. It was proper stand and deliver, fire it through a gap sort of stuff. And it was just straight away, it's just really eye-catching. After that Under-20 World Cup, I was pretty much expecting a big club to come in straight away. I was expecting someone like a Brighton or one of the big three in Portugal, or one of the usual talent gobblers in Belgium, like your Genks, your Royal Antwerps, your Anderlechts, your Club Brugge's, to come in for him. It didn't happen for whatever reason. Maybe they wanted to see a bit more of a bigger sample of him playing for at club level. But now it's happened a year on to Hull of all places. I know Hull are quite diverse in the recruitment now under the new owner. But again, it's a bit of a surprise. He was linked to Luton Town back in January. That would have been a similar sort of surprise. That wasn't the move I expected him to make. So Hull's of a similar vein, but I think it's a great coup for Hull. This is the type of midfielder that has the potential to be a 30, 40, 50 million pound player in future if he hits his straps. I think his profile as that line-breaking passer, but he can also evade pressure. He can break up play. He's quite physical. He's quite abrasive, quite combative. He's got a very compact frame, which I always like in players. So he ticks a lot of boxes of what the bigger clubs are looking for. That's why I was expecting one of those Portuguese clubs, a Brighton, to come in for him. I think the thing that has perhaps put a lot of teams off is there's a doping scandal, if you can call it that, that's hanging over him at the moment. There's an investigation going on. I'm not entirely clued up on the details, but that's a thing that's happening, and maybe that's why he's dropped down into the clutches of Hull. But again, they've only got him in a loan, so I think that sort of that doping situation is factored into the deal. If it is cleared, then they'll keep him and sign him and he'll be their player. If not, he'll probably just go back. But yeah, Zambrano, really good line breaking passer, one of the best I've ever seen. For Hull to get him is a great coup. It depends a bit on the doping, obviously, but I'm really, really keen to see how he does in the Championship, how quickly he can settle in. Obviously, Ecuador to England isn't a very popular sort of move. It isn't something that we have much precedent for, especially down to the Championship. So it'll be interesting just to see from that scalability point of view again. But yeah, Zambrano's one of my favourites. For Hull to get him, good stuff. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's what you were talking about with the sort of the off-field stuff there. It's perhaps a reason why those big clubs have decided, you know what, let's not. And that's why someone of Hull's stature has been able to pick him up. But yeah, I mean, looking forward to watching him in the Championship this season, seeing how this happens, because we've seen a lot of, I mean, we've seen this sort of seemed similar type of move before, where a player will come into a Championship club from South America and doesn't really settle, doesn't really get to grips with it. But obviously the talent is there, the potential is there. We'll have to wait and see how this goes. But I mean, yeah, for everything that you're saying there, you know, line breaking passes, it's someone who will stand out as long as everything else goes right for him in the Championship in England. That's our five individual player picks. I do have sort of a it's not really a sixth, because it's not one. It's very heavily caveated, and it's a player that I haven't followed in the past couple of years, but previous to that, I did follow quite closely. Mohamed Sanko is still contracted to Stuttgart, has been play or was sort of demoted to the B team or the Zwei team this summer, and has got a loan to Serie B with Cosenza. Last year, he was on loan in the Eredivisie with Heracles Almelo, obviously one of the weaker sides there. I think he only got 6 goals, played most games, but didn't play 90 minutes all that often. And whether that was a decision based on ability or, you know, alternative options, or more of a reflection of the fact that he has had some serious injury troubles in the past, does make me think, like, you know, this it's not last chance saloon, but it could be a season where, if he goes to Serie B, where, you know, players of his stature, he's 6 foot tall, very athletic, leggy, has been this size for a number of years now, he might just find his level. But he's got so much potential. You know, as a young player, when he played for Stuttgart's Zwei team, you know, he got like 9 goals in 15 appearances in the fourth tier as a 17-year-old, had a horrible injury, which ruled him out for the entire campaign straight after that really good breakthrough year for him. And at that time, he was coming through with the first team. You know, he's scoring goals in friendlies for the senior Stuttgart side. Knee ligaments went and, yeah, needed surgery, and that was it for him for the season. Since then, hasn't really broken through in the way that we would have expected or wanted for him to. But ultimately now he's got that opportunity to potentially do that with Cosenza in Serie B. I mean, I remember us talking about him probably 3-4 years ago, Lou. What do you make of the path that he's sort of been on since then? Is it one where we're going to sound incredibly clever when he bangs 20 goals in a league which really doesn't have a Mohamed Sanko at the moment?
It could happen. I think we always see it with these sort of physical strikers as well. They take a bit longer to translate that sort of physicality to senior football. I think sometimes it takes that age 23, 24, 25 season where it all comes together and they start doing what they were doing at youth level. Obviously, the injuries are a massive factor. I think it's a shame that he's had so many injuries, and that's a big factor of why he's where he is now. I think Serie B in general is quite an interesting league for young talent. I think there's this perception around Italian football that young talent isn't the play. It shouldn't be going to Italian football, shouldn't be going to Serie C, Serie B, Serie A. But I think it's a bit more of the opposite. I think youth does get a decent chance in Italian football. I think we see it year on year, where these young players do get these sort of really good minutes and they kick on pretty quickly. He's definitely an interesting one. In terms of other honourable mentions, on your list, you had Stade Rennes, and I'm keen to talk a bit about Stade Rennes as well. They're having a very Stade Rennes sort of window. They're signing a lot of young players, as well as Glenn Kamara from Leeds. I think, again, building on that theme that we started with in terms of selling academy talent, they've sold a couple again on the back of selling Matisse Tell the other year. Desiré Doué has gone to PSG for 50 million. Jean-Noël Bellocian's gone to Bayer Leverkusen for 15 million. And you do get that sort of nagging sense that they haven't really fulfilled their potential at Rennes. They haven't really done as much as what you would hope they would. They were always going to leave to these sort of clubs, but you'd like to see them play a bit more and be a bit more of a key starter. But yeah, just running through their recruitment now, they've signed boys from Elitserien, MLS, League One in the EFL, Ligue 2, just all over the place, very Stade Rennes. The one, obviously I'm biased because I'm Welsh, but the one that I'm really keen to see is Jordan James going from Birmingham City to Stade Rennes. I don't think we've really seen the best of Jordan James yet. When he's played for Cymru, he's looked really good next to Ampadu in midfield as that sort of connecting midfielder that can has a bit of a shithouse edge about him. He has a bit of a goal scoring edge about him as well. He can do everything in midfield, and the situation that he was in that Birmingham team ever since he broke through wasn't really conducive to seeing what he can really do. So I'm like pretty excited to see him in Ligue 1, to see him in a team and an environment which should be a bit more forgiving for what his skill set is. And then the other one then, well, there's two more that I really like from Stade Rennes. Carlos Andres Gomez has gone from, they've signed him from Real Salt Lake in MLS. He's a player that I picked up on at the start of the MLS season when he was just scoring and assisting basically every game. I went to watch the clips then and he looked really good. He's interesting in particular because he's a right footer that plays on the right wing, which isn't really something that's prevalent in modern football. But he's got that sort of Theo Walcott style, attack the space in behind, get up to the box and just drill the ball across goal into the lower corners. He's an interesting one again from that MLS point of view, as that stepping stone league from South America to Europe. I've written about it for Skill Corner at the start of the year in terms of just pinpointing some markets for that MLS club should be focusing on, and South America is a massive one for them. So this is another example of that. And then the other one then, touching on the profiles and potential bit that we talked about earlier on, is Henrik Meister. He's gone from Sarpsborg, whom he joined last season for about 130k. He scored not a huge amount of goals in many games, but he's scored regularly enough for Rennes to sign him for 7 million. It's something like a 14,000 return of income percentage or something, which is mental for Sarpsborg. But yeah, he's another one that has that sort of profile of being really tall, really fast, really languid, really leggy, and he stretches into space and finishes goals. And that's the sort of profile that clubs will just be obsessed with straight away. So to see him go from 130k signing to 7 million sale in 12 months is just a prime example of that profiles and potential.
It's very Norway, isn't it? It's very Scandinavian football where you see someone just lift off. I really like that Carlos Andres Gomez move as well. Feel like when you see a player who's ready to go into a top European league, their output just goes through the roof. Well, obviously for attacking players, and that is essentially what has happened with him. It's one of the reasons why I picked out Tierno Barry. You know, his output at the start of this season is just taken off, and the back end of last season, and clubs will be aware of that. They're just waiting, you know, they're all monitoring these players, but they're just waiting to pull the trigger, and it's ultimately who gets there first. And Rennes have been really, really, really proactive with it. The Jordan James one, I absolutely love it. I agree with you. I don't think we've seen the best. I much prefer him when he's playing for Wales. I think it's really, really telling that you look at the number of minutes that have been played by teenagers in the Championship over the last couple of years. Jordan James is pretty much the only one who hasn't, who's kept pace with the likes of, you know, when Jude Bellingham was at Birmingham, Archie Gray at Leeds last season, Harvey Elliott when he was on loan at Blackburn There'll be others that I'm completely forgetting who are, you know, high profile as well. Jordan James is the only one who I don't think gets the respect that he deserves for just how much he was relied upon in that Birmingham team, in which was at times a very, very dysfunctional Birmingham team. So I'll be really interested to see how he adapts to Liga, because, as you say, the potential for him to really develop into a, you know, 100 cap Welsh international, you know, real cornerstone of the national team, is definitely there.
Yeah, I think James in particular is that sort of profile that will be, again, will be linked by Fabrizio Romano to top six Premier League clubs within a couple of years if he really starts playing and starts doing what he does. He's a sort of 40-50 million pound midfielder. But yeah, I'm just really excited for him just to get out and try something new. Obviously Brittany has some quite close links to Wales in terms of culture, in terms of language and stuff like that. So it's really cool from that angle. So yeah, exciting one.
And weather. To say that
yeah, very wet.
Very similar. Celtic weather as well as everything else. Yeah, that's everything we've had to cover on this week's, or rather this month's Scouted podcast. Hope you've enjoyed that interesting transfers roundup. Certainly had a lot of fun researching these players and having a look and really delving down and picking out the ones which are of particular interest to us at Scouted. Yeah, we'll be back shortly with another episode, and we'll certainly be returning with interesting transfers volumes 3, 4, 5 in future transfer windows as well, because yeah, these are among the favorites that I get to do. But yeah, Lou, thank you for joining me again, and if you'd like to read more of what Lou has to say, and I mean there is so much that you can read of Lou's work and it's all fantastic, then do subscribe to the Scouted Notebook. There's a lot of stuff on there, as well as, you know, guest pieces that we've had from some of the best in the business, on youth football, development, scouting, recruitment, talent ID, all that sort of stuff, as well as our in-house analysts and writers, you know, the likes of Stephen Gnavis, Jake Entwistle, who's joined the team full-time as of a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, there's lots of good stuff that's already there, and also plenty more coming. So I can only encourage you to sign up. And again, thank you very much to our data partners, Skill Corner, for providing their services, and it really does help to narrow the pool of potential players that we want to discuss when we're researching for these sorts of episodes. But yeah, Lou, thank you for joining me, and listeners, thank you for tuning in. Bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up-and-coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.